Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm Liz Loza, joined as always by Matt Harmon for our recap of Sunday's games. Now, because we don't typically talk about the Sunday night football game in these episodes, this might be the only NFL podcast in the world that won't mention it this week. I mean, there's kind of a big event happening. Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, not going to hear those words in this podcast, except for just now, which I did. So I guess we did mention. Sorry. There you go, Matt.
There you go. Yeah. We're definitely going to be the only one that will not have like a full 30 to 40 minute discussion about this one game, which again, we're just trying to stand out from the marketplace here.
Yeah, no fake Boston accents here. No mentions about pies and bars where friends know your name. We're going to get right to it. But actually, before we dive into all of the fantasy fun, let's take care of a little pre-show business. By now, I'm guessing that our listeners have heard us talk about Yahoo Fantasy Plus, and those listeners fall into either one or two categories. Either you, dear listener, are utilizing the Trade Hub, the research assistant, and Andy Barron's absolutely fire weekly newsletter to dominate your league, or you haven't gotten around to it because your fantasy football team is suffering as a result, and maybe you're just feeling a little apathetic. Well, don't be like that. Get on it. There's still time. It's only week 4. We're cruising to week 5, so let this be your reminder that you can try out Fantasy Plus for free at yahoofantasyfootball.com/plus. Matt, speaking of trying out new things, not for free, but in a price that maybe you weren't expecting, Justin Fields had a second start. How about that? How about that for a segue?
Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it.
Well, Matt Nagy, he has a game plan. I'm not quite sure which quarterback it's for because it was really just about the running back. And that running back's name is David Montgomery, who I hope he comes up with something else for week 5 because Montgomery hurt his knee after a big game this week.
Yeah, well, it sounds like Bill Lazor was the one who called the plays in this one.
Very true.
Yeah, so, and of course, Matt Nagy then afterwards, like, I will not be answering any more play call questions for the rest of the year. It's like, buddy, just let the good thing be the good thing. Like, if it's working for your team, why do you have to be so weird? Can you just give the guy a little shine?
Like, does it cost you that much to be like, yeah, Bill made it happen against the Lions, which was really a very difficult matchup, let's be honest.
Yeah, it was a pretty tough hurdle to clear. It was great to see David Montgomery get after it in this game. Also love to see Darnell Mooney, 125 yards on 5 catches, made several deep catches down the field. That is kind of what we thought the Justin Fields experience would bring to this offense over Andy Dalton. Look, Fields is still a rookie. It's not going to be completely clean. I certainly was not expecting just 9 yards rushing from the guy. Allen Robinson got over our meager FFL line of 49.5 yards. I think I threatened to fake quit if he didn't get over that. He got over that, still just 63 yards. This offense is not going to be suddenly a fantasy football bonanza by any means. Fields is just not at that point. This offense is not at that point, but I do think this offense has been good when Bill Lazor has taken over the play calling duties before. Like, some of these guys just aren't, and I don't blame them. Like, it's tough to do multiple different things. Like, Liz, it would be tough for you or I to do this podcast and write an article at the same time. But it's like doing two things at once is tough. Doing two things is tough for old Matt Nagy. So, like, let's just let Bill keep calling the plays, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my issue with Matt Nagy, and I don't want to turn this into like Chicago Tonight, but you might have had a plan for the rookie that fell into your lap and that made the city cheer with glee and hope for the first time. Like, that's sort of the issue. But you're right, in terms of what we're seeing now from fantasy, this was the hint. We saw the hint of Mooney being the favorite target for Fields 2 weeks ago before last week's disaster. I guess the main question is, though, like, Allen Robinson, 3 catches on all 3 targets. So we like the efficiency. We're not particularly surprised that he's clutch, but 63 yards, 128 yard catch. Like, this is problematic. And if the game plan continues to be focused on the run, again, David Montgomery has a knee problem. So we'll see. I don't know how much volume there is going to be.
No, I mean, it's just the offense is in no way constructed for Allen Robinson to get the type of volume that he's got the previous 2 years in 2019 and 2020. Just whether it suddenly does become an aggressive run first operation with Fields or Montgomery.
Defense is not good enough to do that. Maybe they were this week against the Lions, but not overall.
Yeah, either that or just, one way or another. I just don't see how this team is going to be on the field enough even for Allen Robinson to get 150-plus targets. So, he's kind of just a boom-bust low-end wide receiver too, if that maybe the rest of the way. It's a bummer, but maybe Fields gets more comfortable. And, that's another thing too, with all of these rookies that come in, I feel like I've been complaining about this basically – all through the first month of the season, but all of these rookies, whether it's Justin Fields or even Trevor Lawrence and obviously Trey Lance too, a lot of these guys, I think Trey Lance did take a few snaps with the ones in the offseason, but Justin Fields never did that. He doesn't have timing down with a guy like Allen Robinson. So we'll just have to see how it develops throughout the year, but I'm pretty nervous about it for sure.
Mm-hmm. You're basically hoping for you're treating him like a tight end, 3 to 5 catches over 50 yards and a touchdown. Honestly, what do you that? I think that if you're fearlessly forecasting every week, that's going to be the range. Next week, I believe they have the Raiders. So we'll see. Let's talk about Detroit briefly. I think the most interesting thing about Detroit, DeAndre Swift didn't get off as much as we expected he might. Jamal Williams led the backfield in terms of totes, but Swift did see 6 targets through the air. So he remains a solid PPR option. He wasn't a top 12 fantasy running back, but I don't think anyone's going to sit him or downgrade him outside of the top 24 at the position because of the volume. Interestingly, though, Quentin Cephas did lead the receiving corps in yards with 83. He caught 4 of 5. And I mentioned him because, in weeks 1 and 2, he found the end zone. So the problem leading into this season was that outside of Hockenson and Swift, fantasy managers didn't know where to invest in this receiving corps. Was it going to be Williams? Well, he's been hurt. Was it going to be the rookie out of USC, St. Brown? And I think we're sort of...
Remember Breshad Perriman? Remember that?
Oh, yeah, that was a hot minute, too. Sure. Oh, he could have had a revenge game last week, too, huh? Anyway, but I think we're starting to see at least some wrinkles. It's not going to be helpful on a week-to-week basis, going to be helpful on a weekly basis, but once injuries start to hit some more and we move into the byes, I think Cephas is someone that you might want to play the matchups with.
Yeah, I agree. And I had that exact logic going into last week when he played Baltimore. And of course, because they'd been giving up a ton of production to wide receivers with those corner injuries. And they had 1 catch for 8 yards or something like that last week. So it is going to be very volatile because this is not a great offense overall. We'll see what happens with the receiver rotation, though. It is pretty clearly going to Quintez Cephas. He runs 35 routes in this game. He's number one among the receivers, only trailing TJ Hockenson. So since Tyrell Williams has been out, Cephas has been getting a lot of playing time. The targets aren't always going to be there. The quality of targets aren't going to be the same because he's an outside ball winner. So there's going to be some volatility there for sure. But I agree with you. I think he's somebody in deeper leagues that should definitely be on rosters. He's going to have these type of games where he pops up and makes some big plays. And because he's sort of the our old one of these things doesn't look like the other theory, Liz. With old Darius Slayton back when the Giants had 55 slot receivers. things aren't looking so good for Darius Slayton right now, by the way. But, he stands out when the team runs through their two friggin' running backs and the tight end, and then even Amon-Ra St. Brown, who had a decent game today, not a big yardage game, but 6 catches on 8 targets. Even he stands out from Amon-Ra St. Brown because St. Brown's a slot receiver and Quintez Cephas, again, outside X receiver.
And the Bears have a vulnerability against the slot. Just FYI,
yes,
moving forward.
Yes, true.
Moving along, let's talk about the Colts at Miami. These Dolphins have really, they've been trying, but they're not getting much traction. It was interesting and I think very nice to see Jonathan Taylor manage 103 on the ground plus a touchdown considering the injuries to Quentin Nelson and considering that Carson Wentz, and you couldn't miss it because of the broadcast crew, kept mentioning the fact that he's working on these two bad angles, and yet you did see Jonathan Taylor cross the century mark yardage-wise. So that was that's something to be hopeful about, right?
Yes. That's kind of how he's going to have to make it happen for you in fantasy because Nyheim Hines is still there. Marlon Mack also got 10 carries for 22 yards. Like, whoa, what is that?
Well,
he was on the trade.
It's
like a showcase game.
Yeah.
Showcase game, I guess. I mean, I don't know if 10 carries for 22 yards is going to really move the needle in the trade market, but maybe just reminding other teams that he exists. Jonathan Taylor, like you said, explosive game, and that is how it's going to have to happen. It's going to have to come from big plays. It's going to have to come from touchdowns. We know that Jonathan Taylor is perfectly capable of doing both of those things, so that's good news. In the receiver room, Michael Pittman continues to be a volume hog in this offense. 8 targets. It's only 6 catches for 59 yards because Carson Wentz is not good. But I mean, I think that this is just going to have to be, he's a guy that you're probably going to want to, he's almost similar to how you view Allen Robinson, right? Like, you know that the potential is there, but and the volume is going to be there because these guys are good players, but you know, it's not going to be clean every single week because of the quarterback situation.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably right. Miami, I found this game incredibly boring. Like, I don't really have that much exciting stuff to say. If anything, it was a confirmation game. It was nice to see Devonta Parker get open in the end zone. And also, after he wasn't able to the first time, to see Brissett go right back to him. Like, I kind of always like that. Yeah. And so
it's nice.
And I'm not giving up on you. I appreciated that this backfield in Miami is an absolute disaster. There's no efficiency. There's no creativity. There's no game script for them anyway, at least until Tua comes back. And so you've got Mike Gesicki continuing to see a larger volume of targets with Brissett under center. And Will Fuller was back in this one, but he didn't do a whole lot of anything. And Jaylen Waddle continues to like be this indescribable short yardage option, even though he only caught 3 of 4.
6.7 air yards per target for Jaylen Waddle.
So gross.
It's not great. That's kind of the Jacoby Brissett show, though. Like, this guy, he doesn't push the ball downfield. I mean, Tua doesn't really push the ball downfield either. So, I mean, Waddle's going to kind of have to. I mean, there was some more aggressive showing from Tua at different points, like in the preseason, everything like that. But these guys are going to have to live with these short ADOT over the middle type of targets. And Will Fuller, he gets hurt after 9 routes. Maybe the NFL should make one PED exception, and it should just be Will Fuller. Like, that's the only way he gets this. Let him take whatever he was taking last year. Let him take it. It's fine. It's just one guy. Like, it's no big deal. Nobody will remember. Mike Gesicki is, I think, the big winner right now. I don't know how I feel about will it be sustainable when Tua comes back, but I'm probably, because of the tight end landscape, like, willing to maybe trust it, but not completely trust it. 6 targets, 25 routes in this one, and again, he does get in the touchdown column as well. So for now, with Brissett under center, I'm definitely comfortable starting Mike Gesicki every single week, and just kind of waiting to see what happens when Tua gets back.
Yeah, I don't think tight end is a position that you can like think ahead to necessarily. You have to, like, if something is working right now, don't start messing with it.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
No way. And the same goes for Kareem Hunt, who had another big follow-up to his breakout performance in week 3. He only carried the ball 14 times to Chubb's 21, but he found the end zone on the ground, whereas Chubb hit 100 yards. That's great for him, but he wasn't able to punch it in on the ground. And then Hunt grabbed another 2 through the air for 17. He saw 4 targets. It was really your man, Rashad Hollywood Higgins and OBJ, who dominated the target load for Baker. But, you know, Matt, I'm bearing the lead a little bit here. I know you hate it. We got to talk about the chemistry between Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. Because, I mean, it would appear as though that is a problem.
I don't know. I think Baker just didn't play well in this game. I think he just overall, like, I mean, Browns Twitter was really pissed about his performance in this spot. And, you know, everything is working for this Browns offense, but Mayfield is still gonna, this is why, even as he was like crushing it to start last year, or to end last year, excuse me, I still kind of compared him to the guy who he played today, Kirk Cousins. Like, Kirk is gonna have these moments where he gets white hot, plays extremely efficient. Kirk is also gonna have those games where he throws up all over his shoes. And this was kind of, I just don't think Mayfield played well in this game. It's not as if, like, you know, you clearly look at him and Beckham and they're just like not on the same page with certain routes or stuff like that. I just don't think he played a strong game overall. And I still maintain that it's kind of a coincidence that these this happens now that Beckham's back, because like last week it wasn't a problem at all. You know, they were perfectly in sync last week, and I just think the Vikings pass rush kind of got the better of the Browns offensive line at different points too. And Mayfield's gonna have these games. Like he's still not a quarterback that every single week we know exactly what we're gonna get from him.
I mean, but I guess I hear what you're saying, and I'm not disputing the fact that Baker is a streaky quarterback, but 2 of 5 for 7 when OBJ is like kind of open. And I feel like timing is part of chemistry. Like, isn't that a conversation that needs to be had? The timing between these two, if you don't want to talk about rapport, if you don't want to talk about chemistry, if they're not like, I don't know, dialing up each other and playing Call of Duty or whatever the kids do, like I feel like the timing is off. And I don't think that is wholly on Baker, because we have seen him click with Jarvis Landry, a different receiver, 100%, a different type of receiver. Oh, yeah. But, you know, we have seen him click with other receivers. But the one that is, you know, the flashiest, that has the most ceiling potential, there's issue.
Yeah. No, there's something to it. I just can't quite put my finger on it. And that's maybe what bugs me about it, is I'm not willing to. Maybe this is like one of my weaknesses as an analyst. When I like can't explain something, I'm almost like willing to just not believe it's true.
Wow. That's like a whole nother pod series that we could do on things that may or may not be true because they're hard to understand or explain.
Definitely.
I'm getting a little transcendental right now. So I'm just going to move across to, you know what? Actually, that's a great segue, because Dalvin Cook entered this game with an ankle injury. And obviously the Vikings had trouble creating any sort of offense. And when Mike Zimmer was asked about it after the game, and, you know, it seems like an obvious point to say, like, was it because of Cook's ankle issue? Like, could he just not get things going, and then the rest of the whole offense couldn't, like, flourish? And he was like, nah, I don't think that was it. I mean, he went in and out a couple times, a little bit gimpy, but nah, not that. So maybe Mike Zimmer, too, can't explain it, so he doesn't believe it.
Perhaps, right? I know that there was the report going into it that Tom Pelissero and Dalvin Cook had a conversation that, and Dalvin basically said, like, I'm playing today and expect me to be me. And then there was also something about, like, how he kind of wanted to have a big game and put it, you know, because he was playing his former coordinator or something like that. Yeah. And I was like, what are we doing? Something about that felt a little weird. And like you mentioned before, that, you know, Mercury is in retrograde. So, like, maybe we're just all feeling a little off. Dalvin Cook really trying to prove something here. Well, I don't know what he's trying to prove. Part of me was almost like, why are we rushing Dalvin Cook back? I mean, I don't know if he's being rushed back, right? What the hell do I know? But like, what, Alexander Mattison's coming off such a big game.
Sure.
In his stead, why not just ride the guy for one more week? This game just overall did not go to my expectations. I expected this game to be, and I talked about this with Minty on the Yahoo Sportsbook live show today, like, it feels like a lot of these games where the consensus, I'm putting myself in there too, is like, oh, this looks like a really high scoring game. You know, this could be a potential shootout, whatever. They're not, like, this one didn't go that way. The Seahawks 49ers didn't really go that way. You know, like, I feel like unders overall have been hitting a lot this year. I don't know. Don't quote me on this. Like, I'm only going anecdotal. I don't know if that is actually the case, that unders have been hitting more this year, but it feels like a lot of these games that we're sort of kind of circling on our fantasy calendars as like, oh, this could be a really high scoring matchup. This one had a pretty high total. A lot of people were very excited to like stack this game up in daily fantasy. It just did not go that way at all.
I thought this was going to be a pretty even match, but I hear what you're saying. And I think that's still, we're trying to figure out the importance of pieces that are not fully healthy. And in this one, the Vikings defense is getting healthier. Obviously, the Vikings lost this game, but every week they're getting healthier. So we still remember week one and being like, oh my God, Kirk went into overtime and he threw a million. Why? The defense was no good. He had to keep pace with it. But like, that's not true. Right. And then on the other side of things, like, Jarvis Landry is a really important piece, but we don't. And last week we saw that being band-aided by Kareem Hunt. So we're like, oh, I guess it's not that important. But actually, like, we're still sussing out the importance. Like, you can do it for a week, but then guess what? The opposing team gets to watch tape and figure out how to stop that from happening again. And, you know, it's a copycat league. So I think you're right that we're just sort of figuring out how important each piece is. And if they're not at 100%, I mean, we're talking over unders, like, immediately for me, the Seattle the Seattle, who did they play?
Why San Francisco.
Thank you. There are so many NFC West matchups today. The Seattle-San Francisco game is one of those. I was like, well, I don't think they're going to be able to hit the over because not everybody's healthy. Like, this is kind of a mess. But anyway, I think that's a really interesting point, and we'll have to ruminate on that one. But I do want to go move forward to the Washington football team at Atlanta, because if we're talking about not hitting expectation, I had pretty high expectations for Taylor Heinicke coming into this one. But I also really thought that the Falcons offense would be able to fight back a little better. Now, Tank Williams on FFL, I think, was pretty spot on, or at least closer to spot on, about the fact that this might be the matchup that gets the Washington football team's defense finally going, that kicks it into the drive that we were expecting. So I don't know, what's your take on this? I mean, I feel like there's a lot of people. The big story, obviously, is Cordarrelle Patterson. Yes, 3 touchdowns through the air, six carries for 34 on the ground. It's the, like, headline everywhere. We've been talking about Cordarrelle Patterson since week one. We knew that this was going to look like a timeshare between him and Mike Davis. But, like, we shouldn't be surprised that Patterson had, like, an anomalistic, fairly anomalistic in that it's 3-touchdown outing. The real surprise is that Kyle Pitts can't hang on to a damn ball, and that Matt Ryan feels most comfortable being put into, like, designs and gadgety type situations.
Yeah, I mean, good luck with the Cordarrelle Patterson thing. Like, good luck. I mean, he's running so few routes. He only runs 12 routes in this game. Obviously, all the big plays come in the passing game. He's not really being used as a traditional back.
Right.
Mike Davis is obviously way out snapping him. Mike Davis does get involved as a receiver in this one, too. Catches a touchdown on just 2 targets. So that's just kind of just – it's a messy situation there, right? I think the Falcons offense played pretty well today. I mean, from, like, a win probability standpoint, like, on our site and their box score, they were like at 70% up until the very, like, if you look at the chart, it's like, oh, Atlanta's like 60% to win this game, 70% to win this game, but the 100% Washington football team at the very, you know, at the very end because of what Taylor Heinicke pulled off. I think that Washington, obviously, I mean, they give up these. Cordarrelle Patterson got wide open on some of those, like, downfield plays, especially his one long touchdown. I still think there's some miscommunication, some issues in that with that Washington defense overall. So we'll kind of have to. I still think they're definitely not going to be the unit that we thought coming into this year. That's kind of my stance on that.
No, but they are trying, right? Like, the process is here, even if the result isn't yet. Calvin Ridley has 13 targets. Kyle Pitts has 9 targets, right? That is, I mean, I think a lot of it is Matt Ryan. We keep talking about him every week.
Yeah,
whether it's the like, whether the playbook is too dense or too new, or the O-line, or just a comfortability or a physical, I don't know what it is. But, like, if we're going to talk about chemistry, quote, with OBJ and Baker Mayfield, we got to talk about timing with Matt Ryan and these other options. And again, the all of this offense, right? Like, so how many? 3 of the 4 touchdowns that Matt Ryan threw are because of some blown coverages or some, like, weird gadgety, like, manufactured play that he got lucky on.
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning that coming into this game, in terms of, like, how much he was pushing the ball 10 plus air yards down the field, he was, like, in the Andy Dalton zone. It was like him and Andy Dalton in terms of passes of 10 plus air yards. Like, that's not what you want. You don't want to be in the Andy Dalton zone in the year 2021, Matt Ryan. So I definitely think, look, he's not quite, you know, Ben Roethlisberger dusted, but he's getting close. I mean, we're kind of on that watch with Matt Ryan. Like, how much does he have left in the tank? And, you know, it's just I still don't really have a lot of faith in the Falcons offense, I think, coming out of this game. I think that, well, obviously, as you mentioned, some of those blown coverages and stuff like that, he got the ball down the field today, but we'll see if that really is going to hold. On the flip side, Washington's offense is fun. I mean, it's just my guy, Taylor Heinicke, the pride of Old Dominion University. He's out there just slinging that thing around. Terry McLaurin, that guy's a superstar.
2 touchdowns.
This was a fun game. Antonio Gibson also gets involved. Like, people are still out here whining about Antonio Gibson's usage. Touches the ball, 16 times in this one? scores a touchdown. He's not going to, no one ever said he was going to be like a 25 touch a week guy. Nobody ever projected that. You couldn't project that with Antonio Gibson. The thesis of drafting Antonio Gibson was that he was going to be an explosive guy who scored potentially a lot of touchdowns and, you know, was an efficient runner. So far, he's been that through the first 4 weeks of the season. He's an RB2. He's not an RB1. Well, he might be an RB1 just because the landscape's not that great. Right. But yeah, it's not great.
I think people are just heated because McKissick has had two big games, right? And that's
right. But then sandwiched between but between those two big games, he does absolutely nothing. So I think that the biggest problem for Antonio Gibson is that the defense is not as good as we thought. If the defense was as good as we thought it was going to be, like a top five unit, we clearly, based on the usage of McKissick in games that are closer, weeks one and week three, well, I guess in week three, not so much, but in week one, like right when the game was pretty close between them and the Chargers, McKissick did absolutely nothing, and Gibson touched the ball a ton of times. So far, the 3 weeks after that, the defense has obviously not been up to snuff, and then McKissick gets involved in Thursday Night Football. He gets involved in this game. I mean, that was also McKissick's like not, he's not a, like he made an unbelievable play on a touchdown.
It was
like,
kind of fun, total right? Jag. Like if you're
it was
in
fun,
a,
yeah.
If you're in a deeper league, I don't hate it. Like that's one of the. I think that you're brilliant to mention that it's the defense that's negatively affecting Gibson, but also positively affecting McKissick. And if you're in a really really deep league with a bunch of flexes, then this is a guy. If you're looking at the points in the matchup, that maybe if you expect Washington to be chasing points, you throw McKissick into a flex, obviously in a you know, PPR friendly format. One last note on this game. Logan Thomas did exit with a hamstring injury. I keep forgetting that Ricky Seals-Jones, I mean, I know he scored in that Thursday night game, but I keep forgetting he's even still in the league. So nobody, don't go crazy picking up Ricky Seals-Jones. Logan Thomas did exit with a hamstring injury. We got to see what that means. Next week, I believe the Washington football team is playing the Saints at DC. So to look ahead, keep an eye on that. Buffalo managed its second shutout of the season against Houston. Dawson Knox, by the way, now 4 touchdowns over 3 games. You and I talked about him and talked him up, frankly, on FFL. He was in my sleepers piece. You know, you never, I said this in my sleepers piece, you never want to chase touchdowns, but he's making it awfully tempting. And also, you don't mind being attached to an offense that passes that often and a quarterback that good. And that might be the exception of chasing touchdowns.
You can chase touchdowns when you're playing, you know, in an offense that's tethered to Josh Allen that throws the ball like this. I'm totally comfortable with chasing touchdowns with Dawson Knox. I mean, he's getting up there close to being like a top 12 tight end the rest of the way. I mean, I think if he's not like in terms of like your rest of season rankings, like he might be up there at this point because he's continuing to get volume. I mean, there's no question with his playing time. He ran 25 routes in this one. That wasn't far off from Stephon Diggs and Emmanuel Sanders at 28. It was more than Cole Beasley. He gets 8 targets. I can tell you for a fact, because I had Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs stacked in daily fantasy. And I mean, Diggs had a pretty big game here, 7 catches, 114 yards. But every time they got in that red zone, I'm like, all right, let's get our Stephon Diggs touchdown here. There's Dawson Knox getting like a designed screen pass thrown to him in the red zone. So if Dawson Knox, he should be picked up in every single league, and he's probably a guy that you're going to break ties in favor of starting. I mean, some of these players that went ahead of him, like Robert Tonyan, or I know Dallas Goedert scored today, but Goddard's splitting those reps with Zach Ertz pretty evenly. Like Dawson Knox is probably moving ahead of those guys.
And you hear the same argument, right? Like for Jared Cook every single week. Well, you know, you want to be attached to Justin Herbert and the Chargers offense is lit. And yet, illegal shift penalty notwithstanding, man does not do anything. So if you're going to use that argument for a 33-year-old Jared Cook, you can use it for Dawson Knox.
Jared Cook just catching a random stray in the Bills Texans recap. How many Earth seconds should we spend on recapping the Texans?
I do think there's an interesting point. Hold on. And I mentioned this at the top of FFL. I was watching. Brandon Cooks has been absolutely phenomenal, right? It doesn't matter where he's playing. It doesn't matter who his quarterback is. The man puts together 1,000-yard seasons. And he has caught 9 balls in back-to-back games, except when he has to deal with Tre'Davious White, who has been an absolute monster. Tre'Davious White has held every single, up until this week, receiver in his primary coverage to just 3 catches. Cooks caught 5 of 7 for 47. He had 7 targets. I'm not worried about Cooks. I just think that White gets the point and the advantage in this battle.
Man, you're going to give a lot of credit to Tre'Davious White on this one. I'm going to give a lot of just most of the blame to Davis Mills. The guy was a train
wreck. He was a disaster, sure.
In this game.
But he wasn't not a disaster before.
Yes. Well, he was fine against the Panthers on Thursday night, right? Which was kind of a surprise. But man, I mean, this is possible in this with Davis Mills. He's a third round rookie. Like I'm talking about Trey Lance and Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence and all these guys that didn't get a ton of first team reps and how that might throw off their timing. They're not totally prepared to play. Davis Mills was not. Like, this was not supposed to happen, right? Tyrod had this team playing pretty well. From an EPA per dropback standpoint, obviously Davis Mills ranks dead last this week. He's at -27.3. That, just for my non-dorks out there, that is really, 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 really bad. I would say that this was mostly... Like, Brandon Cooks can make a lot of things happen with bad quarterbacks, but there's some threshold here to what we're working with Davis Mills. And I'm still a little, this, I'm not like totally willing to just be like, all right, next week.
He's got New England next week, so it's not great. I mean, if you want to talk about Bill Belichick and rookie quarterbacks, like you would probably believe that the matchup is very, very difficult again for Cooks. I have Pittman and Cooks on a team. They're both like my flexes every week. And every week I sit there and perseverate over like, I don't know which one. I mean, I guess the arguments are the same. Like, they're going to get volume. Yeah. They're quite talented. And I'm playing the matchups. This week I went with Pittman because I didn't like the White option. So regardless, I think a lot of people have been excited by Cooks because of the volume. That argument, that process has been working out. He's going to continue to see volume. He's just going to have his down weeks because of Mills and because of the matchups. Let's just use a yes and to finish that one up. Yes, and Minty Betts, by the way, has been absolute fire. I know you do a show with her. We do a show with her together on FFL. Her trap game of the week was the Giants at New Orleans. Now, this did not go over well emotionally because it was the Saints' return to the Superdome after Hurricane Ida. And girl, nailed it. 27-21. Yeah. Saquon looking all sorts of vintage. That Atlanta Falcons defense gave him exactly the mojo he needed to get back on track. 18 touches, 126 total yards, and a touchdown. And they did that without any wide receivers. Plus, Kenny Golladay had a decent showing, so maybe he's been able to manage that hip issue. I think last week when he was in and out of the game, the hip issue is going to be an issue for the entire year. But I think last week it came as a surprise, and so there was a like, oh God, we have to manage him because we can't lose him too. And now they had kind of a week to prepare and figure things out. So I think as long as Slayton, who you mentioned earlier, and Shepard, who also is dealing with a hamstring issue, continue to deal with their soft tissue issues, you're going to see Golladay and Barkley lead the offense.
Ribs and hamstrings have been just killer. Yeah. This year, in terms of, that's been like the injuries of the year. So I think that, like, number one, I was with Minty on kind of feeling like people were too excited about this narrative for the Saints, like they're coming back home. That's great. It's not a very good team that's coming back home, at least offensively, right? Like, this offense is just, it's fine. I mean, they're trying to hide their quarterback, obviously. Everybody got all gassed up about that Marquez Callaway touchdown last week. That was like the exact same play that Jameis Winston threw a pick on against the Panthers. And like, I guarantee you, like, as much as Sean Payton might have been like, that's nice that we scored that touchdown, Jameis, don't ever freaking do that again, right? Yeah. Don't do that again. Great, great result. Horrible process. Don't do it again. You can't bank on anyone in this receiver core. Alvin Kamara doesn't get a target. He does obviously have a big gay on the ground. I think the Giants, too, to bring it back to the whole point here, I think the Giants are like a functional NFL offense. You know, look, I don't love the prospects of the team overall. You will never be able to convince me that Jason Garrett's the guy to be at the helm of this thing. But I think they're like right around, they were 14th in offensive DVOA coming into this game. And they did it without, I think Shepard's their best receiver. I think Shepard will be their best receiver throughout the course of the season. But once he's healthy, if he's healthy, Kenny Golladay, though, he's a huge addition to have a game like this, right? Where he leads the team with 41 routes, makes plays down the field. Like, this is exactly what they thought when they signed him. And then sprinkled on top of that, you have Saquon Barkley getting involved as a receiver, 74 yards and a touchdown. You also have Kadarius Toney, yeah, who basically takes the slot role from Sterling Shepard when he's, again, I think Shepard will go right back to his normal role because he and Jones have the best chemistry. He's always open. He's the best route runner. But Kadarius Toney did some things in that role with 9 targets. And then John Ross. Liz, John Ross comes in.
2017 again, baby.
Right, he runs just 21 routes, but still makes three catches on 4 targets, one of which was for a long 52-yard touchdown, averages 18 air yards per target. Like, that's just a nice little sprinkle on top of this offense. And Daniel Jones, to his credit, is playing you know, he's not like a mess out there. So I think this offense is never going to reach its potential because of Jason Garrett and some of the weaknesses overall. They don't have a good offensive line, but I think it's time to accept that there's some good here with this Giants offense to mine, especially if they're going to be this was the plan for the offseason, was to beef up the playmakers. This was a pretty good showing.
I that's a lot. I think hold on, let me think about this for a second.
I don't want to sound like I'm too excited. I don't want to sound like I'm that excited about the Giants or anything, but my expectations were really low. And I think they're clearing my very low expectations.
I think the New Orleans defense is a very good run defense. So it's nice to see Saquon performing at this level, given the matchup. I also think if we're looking at various players exceeding expectation, the fact that Daniel Jones, because what is Kenny Golladay, right? Like, we know that Sterling Shepard has been having a revelation because he's back in the slot where he is probably best suited, right? Kenny Golladay is a high variance player who doesn't separate very much but can win those contested balls. So Daniel Jones, like, is able through this showing that to illustrate that he can fit the ball into these tight windows and that he can succeed at that. Something that we were curious about heading into the season, right? Like, so I think in that regard, we're seeing an offense use the pieces at its disposal to the best of its ability. But that does not mean that I am excited to see them on a weekly basis. And I'm also, like, not excited to see them necessarily at Dallas and to see Trayvon Diggs, assuming that Slayton and Shepard are out again next week, or at least hampered, get into Golladay and make this a mess.
The schedule's not good for the Giants going forward. You mentioned the Cowboys next week. Then they get the Rams, the Panthers, the Chiefs, the Raiders, and the Bucks. It's like, oh, boy. I mean, it's a good thing that they stole a win. Not even steal a win. Like, again, I think that the Giants and the Saints are pretty equal. I just don't have a lot of respect for the Saints offense with Jameis Winston back there and that cast of characters at wide receiver.
Well, we don't know what it is, right? So, do we know what the Saints offense is, really? Like, no. We know this week that Sean Payton is like, well, crap, I guess we should get Taysom Hill involved because I don't know what the hell this is. Like, let's throw him. To me, the Saints don't have an identity, frankly, because you can't have an identity with a quarterback that's as inconsistent as Jameis Winston.
Agree, especially if you want to be like a ball control kind of run first offense, but it's just tough to be that with Jameis Winston.
Oh, absolutely. All right, let's move on to the Eagles game. So another NFC East team, they fell to the Chiefs, allowing the Chiefs to win for the first time in 2 weeks. Interestingly, or a lot of, like, we talked about it a little bit on FFL, there's a lot of hemming and hawing about Tyreek Hill having 2 quiet weeks and defenses taking him away. Yeah, that wasn't going to stand for a third week. Tyreek Hill got absolutely loose. He had a massive game. In fact, both Hill and CEH were 50% of the Chiefs' total targets.
Yeah. That was pretty surprising. I mean, obviously, Travis Kelce gets left out in the cold.
Which is surprising when you saw Dallas work tight end all over Philly last week on primetime.
Yeah, but I mean, when Tyreek Hill's cooking to the tune of 186 yards and 3 touchdowns, yeah, it just don't stop. Don't mess with what's not broken. It is good to see CEH, like, not – there's been no punishment based on the fumbles that he's had. He's still – I mean, just 3 targets in this game, 2 catches for 12 yards. He does manage to get into the end zone, so that's good from a passing game perspective. But you know, he's still going to be volatile. This was another good matchup for him. The Chargers that he got last week was a good matchup. I think that's kind of how he is. He's like a he's a matchup based RB2, and you know, you're probably going to end up starting him every single week, but that's fine. You know, for where you draft him, it maybe it's not ideal depending on where you drafted him, but I do think he's fine to kind of roll out there. And you know, I expected the Chiefs to roll in this game, but at least the Eagles gave a pretty good fight back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jalen Hurts played a pretty good game overall, pretty clean. You know, he did rush for 47 yards on 8 carries, but 387 yards and 2 touchdowns through the air. You know, he made it happen with Devontae Smith, 122 yards, 10 targets for him. That's kind of in the backfield is a mess. I mean, Miles Sanders, that'll be enough of that. That will be enough of Miles Sanders, I think. Not really, but I mean, Kenny Gainwell is continuing to be a factor in this backfield.
He is gaining, in fact, on Miles Sanders.
Oh, boy.
Gross.
Gaining super miles gross on Miles.
But it's mostly because, like, Miles Sanders won't catch the ball. Like, he doesn't get any opportunities in the passing game. And even when he is efficient in the passing game, like, he's not electric. Gainwell had 8 targets in this one. And yes, the Eagles are going to chase points, but let's be real. Eagles are going to be chasing points. I felt like even though Hurts' game was clean, there were moments that I was just like, oh, God, bro, it doesn't have to be this hard. Like, I feel like you can – and he, you know, he's not technically a rookie, but he feels very much like a rookie. And you can feel him thinking as he's dropping back. And it's almost like – and maybe I'm projecting, but it's almost like you can hear him saying, like, I know I'm not supposed to run. I really want to run. But I know if I run, they're just going to tell me all I do is run and I should pass. And then, like, he overthrows Greg Ward or something in the end zone.
Yeah, I think it's also, too, just – with this offense, like I mentioned this on FFL when talking about Miles Sanders, is I just don't think they're like kind of it's not an offense that feels designed for Jalen Hurts. So maybe that's like maybe they're trying to kind of push him to be more of a traditional quarterback and they're asking him to do more traditional quarterback things. But nothing when I watch this offense feels like it's designed to take advantage of his mobility. It's more of just about him scrambling. And obviously he's still developing as a quarterback. You know, Ray Garvin and I talked about this last week. He mentioned that in the Cowboys game, you know, they wanted him to throw to Devontae Smith to the point that Fields was just not looking at that side of the field. He's only looking at one side and hitting those reads over there, not getting off his first read, that they actually moved Devontae Smith from the right or the left, whichever one it was. And so it's like, if you're not going to look over there, we're just going to put our best player over here. Damn it. Like, you're going to look at this guy one way or another. So I think, again, that's just where Jalen Hurts is right now. But I know they were very complimentary of him. The head coach, Nick Sirianni, was complimentary of him after this game. And so that's a good sign.
Yeah, I think we're trending upward. There's, as Jalen Hurts said in his post-game press conference, every game is a learning opportunity, and he feels himself, in fact, absorbing and evolving more and more.
From a fantasy perspective, nobody cares about anything that we just said, because the guy is like literally a top 10 quarterback. Like, he's just going to fall ass wet backwards into being a top 10 quarterback this year, no matter what.
Because of the rushing ability. So maybe he should just rush, right? Instead of thinking about how everybody would like him. In fact, not everybody would like him to be
doesn't care about our fantasy teams, though.
No, probably not. If we're talking about falling backwards into fantasy production and surprising, Sam Darnold is thus far the number one quarterback in fantasy for week 4. Panthers lost, though.
Yeah. There was some bad Sam Darnold in this game. I mean, 2 interceptions, 5 sacks. But unlike Jets Sam Darnold, there was a lot of positive results as well. I mean, he continues to be a force sort of as a runner. He runs 5 times. He scores twice. At some point, that's not going to continue to be the situation. Like, he's not going to score a rushing touchdown to this clip. I can't believe my whole timeline. How dare all of you that said Cam Darnold? I mean, there was way too many of that.
That's filthy.
It's embarrassing. Back to the drawing board on that one.
You're right. Sam Darnold is no longer seeing ghosts. He is being moved and pushed forward by his spirit guides. It is happening in Carolina, and I am all about it. And from onwards, like rippling out from that, DJ Moore, monster game. You called it a couple of weeks ago, about to take his giant leap as a true alpha, converts 8 of 12 for 113 and 2 touchdowns. Robbie Anderson, there was some squeaky wheel begging for that grease heading into this one. Saw double-digit targets, but womp womp, couldn't convert. For mostly just half of them. He converted on about half of them, less than half of them. 5 catches for 46. But we do like to see the volume, I guess.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it was good that it didn't come at the expense of DJ Moore. That's never good when you have something going in terms of chemistry with the receiver, and then you got to like suddenly just do the squeaky wheel thing.
Sure.
From a target standpoint, yeah, it was great for Robbie Anderson. Air yards per target standpoint, 12 air yards per target, you know, 42 routes run. It's all there for Robbie Anderson. It's just not quite clicking. I know a few like Jets folks have pointed out that, you know, despite the fact, oh, these guys have played together, they'll certainly have great chemistry. You know, that it kind of took some time in it. Like Robbie Anderson always would kind of be a slow starter with the Jets, and then he picked things up towards the end of the season. I have no idea if that means something, but I just have seen a few folks that follow the Jets closely mention that as potential, like maybe it's going to just take a little more time for Robbie and Sam to get it down. But I mean, I just think that what's happened here is DJ Moore has just ascended so far to the point that you're not going to, like, that's the guy. Like, you're not going to go away from that guy because he's just better. Like, Robbie Anderson was good last year, but, you know, there was still another step for DJ Moore to take, and he's absolutely taken it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. This was the first game without Christian McCaffrey, and a friend of the podcast, Mauricio Gutierrez, posted a stat on Twitter I wanted to share. Just a reminder that when a number one difference-making player goes out, you can't just automatically replace him with, a rookie from Canada. Chuba Hubbard, 47% of the snaps. Rodney Smith, 38% of the snaps. Royce Freeman, 17% of the snaps. What?
That was a twist.
Yeah.
That was a twist. Rodney Smith did not see that one coming.
No, he didn't have any rushing attempts, but he did draw 5 targets, and he converted on all 5 of them for 48 yards. And we shouldn't be so surprised.
He ran 19 routes to Chuba's 10.
Well, but we shouldn't be so surprised by that, because the knock against Chuba coming out of college was that he didn't have a lot of experience in the passing game. We saw him drop 2 key balls through the air on primetime, right? So we knew that, like, Royce Freeman? Royce Freeman is basically Jordan Howard with slightly better hands. Like, of course, I thought that maybe it was going to be Terrace Marshall who picked up that slack, but no, it was Rodney Smith.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that you're not looking at Chuba Hubbard as a guy that you're just going to drop into the McCaffrey role. Also sounds like there's a chance McCaffrey could be back next week. So they're not
this
really.
This is not.
We'll see about
I hate
that.
When they do this. They did this last year and they rushed him back. I remember when they did this with Saquon in 2019 and rushed him back. I mean, like you said earlier, I don't know if they're rushing back. I'm not living in their body. Who the hell am I? But why not just take a breath? Nobody expects the Panthers to be where they are right now anyway.
Playing with house money a little bit too. And I mean, who the Panthers play next week? I mean, I think that this is an offense that can function without McCaffrey. Because, well, yeah, that should be a pretty close game. Their defense is still playing extremely well too. I know that the Cowboys ended up with a big game. Zeke ran all over them. Dak threw 4 touchdowns. I think that's the interesting conversation in this game, is that the Cowboys are multidimensional. You know, we expected, again, the royal we, the consensus out there, expected that, you know, Dallas to kind of be, at least based on fantasy ADP and some of the talk out there, expected Dallas to be sort of the same team that they were last year, which was high-flying pass offense, going through the 3 receivers, you know, a defense that isn't up to snuff and kind of putting them in negative script. Like, literally, none of that is true. None of that is true. The Dallas defense is pretty good. You know, they're doing exactly what you want a defense that's partnered with a great offense to do, which is just be good enough to mess some things up for the other offense every now and again. Trayvon Diggs has a pick in every single game. Like I mentioned, they got after Sam Darnold in this spot with 5 sacks. They've been pretty good at rushing the passer overall. And, you know, you look at the offense too. Dalton Schultz has clearly been the guy over Blake Jarwin at tight end so far this year, but both of those guys, in terms of routes run, snaps, playing time, blah, 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 both those guys get in the box today, you know, at the expense of CeeDee Lamb, who has a quiet game. Amari Cooper scored a touchdown as well. But, I mean, then you also got the backfield where Tony Pollard continues to be explosive, but Zeke can just be counted on to carry this huge workload as well when they need him to do it. So Dallas is a little more difficult to project than we thought coming into the year, but it's to the betterment of the team. Maybe not so much if you want like both Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb to be wide receiver ones.
I think we're also still stuck in that space between the expectation that this was going to be Kellen Moore's offense, and that's why they drafted CeeDee Lamb, and we were going to invest in this high-flying offense, and seeing that confirmed in week one against Tampa Bay, right? We're like, oh, it's lit. Yeah. We know. And then over the last 2 weeks, they've focused more on the run and they haven't been as high flying. And so there's like, well, those must be flukes, right? They're just playing time of possession because like the Chargers are a really good offense, or I don't know. It's not real. But like now, and yes, game script obviously had something to do with that here, but now you're seeing it be real. Now we're seeing the defense, as you mentioned, not be such a liability. And so there is kind of a compromise because between Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy, where it's like one of those swirl soft serve cones, right? There's a little bit of vanilla swirled into it. You can get any flavor you want, but there's a little bit of Mike McCarthy's vanilla swirled into it. That might be kind of gross.
I mean, I think it's just Kellen Moore. I think Kellen Moore is just kind of doing the thing right, which is, you know, you're not just going out there and being static every single week. Let me tell you what, we're talking about future Cowboys head coach Kellen Moore. He's about to get that
Jason
Garrett.
I'm not
Garrett
denying
treatment.
That. Yeah. But I don't know how
he's
much of that.
About to get that Jason Garrett.
I don't know how much of that is Mike McCarthy not. I mean, when the man like says the word mojo this many times in 2021, I can't.
What is it you say you do here, Mike McCarthy? You've got like Kellen Moore running the offense. You got Dan Quinn running the defense, and you can't even figure out your freaking timeouts. He's definitely going to be he's going to be moved into a, you know, he's going to do the, I got demoted but didn't want to say it thing, where he's like, I've moved into a special advisor role with the Dallas Cowboys.
Consultant to coach. The quarterback or something like those. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the front office consultant, which just means I'm being paid a boatload of money to do nothing.
Lucky. Also lucky.
That must be nice.
The Jets got very lucky to get the Titans in this particular week.
Nailed it.
What
a segue.
First victory for Zach Wilson, 27-24. Even though King Henry had himself a day, Tannehill could not get things going with Josh Reynolds and Nick Westbrook Akini, whatever his name is. That's a great look. No one can see your face, Matt, but that was a good one. They really missed AJ Brown and Julio Jones on this one.
Yeah. Jeez, the Titans defense is so bad. I don't know this. What did I say? This is one of those give, like something's got to give here. You know, the worst passing offense in the entire NFL and the worst passing defense in the entire NFL meet. Which side gives? The Jets had a good game from a passing stand. Well, almost. Corey Davis had a big play here. He gets 7 targets, 4 catches for 111 yards. Still, he's like done a few like fall over things that end up getting Zach Wilson intercepted. He did that earlier this game too, but the volume's still there. He's still clearly the number one guy. You wrote about this coming into the week. Michael Carter looking like he's starting to take a step there as the lead back. He scores a touchdown in this spot. I mean, 13 carries, but nobody else had more than 4, and that was Tevin Coleman. And Tevin Coleman really didn't get going until overtime.
Right.
Michael Carter was clearly the lead snap guy here. So I think this was something we had to see this with the Jets. We had to see them do something here from an offensive standpoint. And this was a positive result.
I think, yeah, all of that checks out. I had been watching the backfield because you're not going to expect after what we saw the first 3 weeks, a lot of game script to go Carter's way. But again, when you look at the matchup and you look at also, you know, Scott Pianowski, and I say this a lot because I think it's important to remember, sometimes when we see, quote, favorable matchups, we assume that one of the offenses is just gonna crush, right? They're just gonna smash. But like, you also need the other team to fight back in order to do that. And so then you can't just like salt a lead and sit on the running back if there's gonna be this like back and forth in this fight. So you kind of have to figure out where you're gonna get your points from. And you know, nobody like really wants to predict game script, but like that's kind of the job. So this is the opportunity, and the Titans, like, they tried, but they just didn't have the manpower at their disposal, the talent at their avail to fight back in a way that could quiet the Jets.
And this was the problem with the Titans all along, which was they were not a deep team. I mean, they made the Julio Jones trade because they needed Julio Jones. Like, it wasn't a let's make a luxury trade as a contender in the AFC. That was a trade they needed. And they really, like you said, they need A.J. Brown and they need Julio Jones back there. Hopefully those guys are not rushed back, because Brown has been, like, dealing with little injuries at every single turn, it seems like. So we'll see. It
lingers, too, though. That soft tissue stuff, like, doesn't just go away all of a sudden. Let's talk about the 49ers and the Seahawks game, because, you know, 49ers fans, fantasy managers, very excited that the Trey Lance era looks like it's probably begun in earnest. Jimmy Garoppolo exited this one with a lower leg, I think a calf issue. Again, the 49ers, just so, to borrow a phrase from you, snake bitten by injuries here. Jimmy had his moments. They weren't always great. Obviously, when you see Lance thrown in, it is the difference between the two in playing style is so stark. Like, Lance's ability to extend plays and just evade a rush, it's really exciting. It offers this entire offense so much lift. And even though the 49ers didn't win this one, I mean, again, this was like one of those ugly games. Like, I thought that this game should not have been as ugly as it was. And I think if both sides had healthy players, it would have been like much more electric. But the silver lining is that we got to see a hint of that spark, the spark of the electricity with Lance.
Yeah, and I think we're going to continue to see it. Jimmy Garoppolo said after the game, per Adam Schefter, that he obviously didn't play the second half, told reporters that he's going to undergo an MRI on his calf, and he, quote, hopes it's just a couple of weeks or something. That's probably not great. So at this point, I think the Trey Lance era is here, unless he goes out there and he plays like Justin Fields against the Browns for like three straight weeks. Even then, I don't know. I mean, I think that this is probably going to be Trey Lance's job. Another note, too, from the post game, Kyle Shanahan even said, this is kind of how I feel about this game. Like, I wouldn't go there and look like, oh, man, this Trey Lance. But like Kyle said after the game. I don't know why I called Kyle. I don't know the guy. Shanahan said after the game that, like, he's like, this was not a game plan for Trey Lance. Like, it's going to look completely different usually. So I wouldn't go and, like, be like, this happened with this. And so I feel like we'll see a very different offense that is actually designed for Trey Lance next week. And that will be exciting. I'm interested to see what that looks like. Man, Deebo Samuel got loose on a broken, busted coverage by the Seahawks. That Seahawks defense is not good. I thought we'd see that more with Jimmy under center. Jimmy just ain't there, man. So we'll see what happens with Trey Lance. I'm excited that this is finally here.
I think Jimmy gets traded. I've been saying that. I think that's why he also said it's going to be a couple of weeks and he's playing down the injury.
Where to, though?
I believe
the
Houston.
Yeah. That makes sense. Gross.
But I believe their bye is like the week before Halloween, which is the trade deadline. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him move midseason, in which case Kyle has played this right and given him a couple of showcase opportunities. He's led an offense. Showcase it for what it's worth. Without Elijah Mitchell in the lineup, Trey Sermon continued to lead the backfield, carried the ball 19 times for 89 yards. Kyle Juszczyk continued to be a surprise weapon. He caught 4-4 for 41. And Brandon Ayuk, however, after two or three red zone looks last week, he was only $15 in DFS. I put him in every single lineup I had, really believing it was going to turn over this week. Caught just 1 of 3 for 15.
We'll see. Maybe things will look different next week with like Lance actually involved in the game plan. I don't know. It sucks. It sucks to be me.
Tyler Lockett was dealing with a hip injury. DK Metcalf managed four catches for 65 yards and a touchdown despite a foot issue. I'm not going to talk about it. Oh, I do know what I want to talk about because I do the sleepers week. I do the sleepers article every week, and I never do what I'm about to do, which is why I'm going to allow myself to do it. Sometimes when you're writing the sleepers piece, and Matt, I'm sure when you're doing like fantasy freebies on FFL, like you're trying to find someone under the radar, right? You're not trying to be like, well, Zach Moss, who just scored two touchdowns, is a quote sleeper, right? You want to say something interesting, but also you don't want to just look crazy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I really feel like Freddie Swaim is going to have an opportunity here because you've got Everett on COVID. You got Lockett banged up. You got the rookie out with a concussion still from week one. The back half of the defense in San Francisco is all sorts of banged up. Josh Norman's got this lung problem. I feel like Freddie Swaim is going to score. And then I was like, nah, I just can't.
Too crazy.
Like, I can't write that. I can't write it. It's too much. It's too much. And also people are going to, is it usable? Is it actionable? Is anyone going to be like, yep, I'm going to take her advice. I'm going to throw it. No, no one's going to do it. And then when he scored, I was just, I feel like sometimes the process works, sometimes it doesn't, but this is one. And I will say it's only useful, and I bring it up not for a victory lap, but because if there continues to be injuries, we do know that Swaim has a place in this offense, and we know a little bit what it looks like.
Definitely. Yeah. It's something to monitor if Lockett's hurt or DK ever gets hurt or something like that. And especially because Everett was out in as well.
Yeah. On the COVID list. Arizona bests the Rams at SoFi. They really shut down Cooper Kupp. I mean,
this was Minty's call of the day, by the way.
Yeah. Like, the money line.
I mean, shout out to Minty here. Like, I mean, she's getting a lot of shout outs on the podcast. Like, she said it again on the Yahoo Sportsbook live show, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, on Yahoo's. Anyways, yeah, like it was unbelievable. Like, she said it again on the house. She's like, yeah, the Rams are gonna lose to the Cardinals, basically, not in so many words. I did not
in gambling words, in betting words. She
yes,
said
in
it.
Betting words. Yeah. In betting words, not in the words that I said, which sounded like just another clown talking about it. So yeah, it was impressive. 4-0 Arizona's 4-0. They look like one of the best teams in football. Kyler Murray looks like the MVP.
Best in the West. Yeah. No disputes here. I know. I definitely thought Arizona was going to cover, but I didn't have the stones to say money line with her. No. I couldn't do it.
No.
Kyler Murray continues to be an absolute beast, finding the evolution of his game through the passing game. Like, in his arm, he is so much better. He didn't run in a touchdown this week, so his stat sheet was not quite as padded. But we're not going to complain, and if you do, turn off this podcast and listen somewhere else because I'm not going to hear it. Chase Edmonds rips off a long run, but he's not allowed to score touchdowns because those all belong to James Conner. Nope, not allowed.
Literally, legally not allowed to score touchdowns is Chase Edmonds. He's only allowed to get like 5 targets a game and average like over 5 yards per carry, but he is not allowed to score. James Conner is going to have like 500 yards for and 12 touchdowns or something this year on the ground.
It is insane. We also saw Max Williams, Max with 2X's, find the end zone. This is not the first time it has happened so far this season. If we are saying that we want to believe a little bit in Dawson Knox, then can that argument extend out to Max Williams, or are there just too many bodies?
Well, this is the problem with trusting Christian Kirk or Rondale Moore every single week. I know AJ Green scored in this game as well on a deep pass, but trusting him every week is that these, and even I think we could have a conversation. I know that this was a bad matchup for DeAndre Hopkins. I know that he's obviously injured, but like last year, the guy was getting like 30% of the targets on this team. That's not happening this year. Like, it's just not in the range of outcomes, which is good for, and I think it's good for the team. You could kind of say the same thing with Stephon Diggs in Buffalo. Like, I think he's going to be around a 25% guy, but he's not going to be a 30% guy like he was last year because Sanders has broken out. Dawson Knox is a thing. Cole Beasley's still there. Same thing with this offense. Like, you weenies out there can think whatever you want about AJ Green's not good anymore. They shouldn't play. Just play the younger guys. Like, but he's been playing well for this team, and he's like the clear number two receiver in terms of routes run and everything. And like, Kirk and Rondale Moore are going to be in their roles. Like, all these guys are going to be kind of volatile. It's you kind of want to break ties in favor of starting them because they're tethered to to Kyler Murray, but you have to accept some boom bust nature of this.
I agree. On the Rams side of things, good news for those of us who were still believing in Bobby Trees is that he finally found the end zone. And this is like 4 of 6 for 48 and a touchdown. Kind of like, I mean, there's a difference in a drop off in talent, both at the coaching level and at the quarterback level. But similarly to Allen Robinson, like you're going to hope for 4 to, but the players are, the receivers themselves are similar in terms of being technicians and reliable and just not seeing the volume. 4 for 48 and a touchdown. Like you're going to hope that you get a touchdown out of Robert Woods. He had, like, he caught the touchdown. He also had another red zone look later in the game that didn't happen. I feel like you have to treat him like a wide receiver 3, low end wide receiver 2 at this point.
Your use of he finally scored a touchdown is both true from a season long and this week perspective, because it literally took to like the very end of the game for him to get that touchdown. Or we were going to be having another conversation about, ooh, this is not great. Yeah, I think Robert Woods is exactly what you said. You got to lower him down from where you thought he was going to be to start the season. Cooper Kupp, 5 catches for 64 yards. They're going to be games like that. I still think he is a top 10 receiver the rest of the season. And Van Jefferson continues to be a thing. Van Jefferson is not running as many routes as Robert Woods or Cooper Kupp, which is a reversal from the first week of the season. But Van Jefferson makes plays. Guy is clearly the third receiver there. Also, it was crazy to see that Daryl Henderson, I was not expecting this, right? Because you know, we talk about these guys that they want to take it easy on or whatever. You would think that Daryl Henderson was like the candidate number one to take it easy on. After they literally trade for Sony Michel because they're worried Daryl Henderson can't hold up. Daryl Henderson gets hurt, and then he just returns to like playing all the snaps and running 35 routes and getting passing game targets and having a pretty decent game overall.
Well, good. I'm glad you brought the backfield up, because I asked Dalton on the Friday pod, the preview pod, are we a little bit worried that Henderson just won't go back to having the total workload that he had, that maybe they'd want to save him? Ribs are injuries. Sony Michel has kind of a brand name about him. Dalton was like, nah, McVay just leans on one guy. Whether that's true or not, Michelle's early fumble sealed the deal for Henderson. Yeah, so we ain't worried about it now.
Yeah, I mean, and it was stark. 57 snaps to 7. Yeah. In favor of Daryl Henderson to Sony Michel. Like I said, 35 routes to 3 for Sony Michel. I kind of am with Dalton that I never thought this was going to be like a split backfield, but it would be like a Michel month, a Henderson month, like something like that. Maybe it just will be Daryl Henderson the rest of the way.
Well, I think it is. I think it is now. I mean, until he hurts himself again. Yeah. So there you go. The Packers, you want to talk about ugly games, messy games. The Packers took it to the Steelers. From a fantasy perspective, here's a note. If Aaron Rodgers said he wants to get his old teammate more involved, I don't care if he mentions Jordy Nelson's name next week, then Jordy Nelson is coming out of retirement. He's going to catch 2 touchdowns just like Randall Cobb did. Of course, there's no MVS, so it made the slot a more viable position for Cobb to own in a voluminous way, and indeed he did. So that happened. Ben Roethlisberger is washed. I know you've got big feelings about how he's like Big Ben is an albatross around the necks of the rest of Pittsburgh's young receiving core. No Chase Claypool this week. Have at it, because this to me was just like a super ugly. No one saw it coming, and we all saw it. No one saw maybe Randall Cobb coming, but we all saw the rest of it coming.
Yeah, this was completely like predictable how this game was going to go. Obviously outside of the Randall Cobb thing. I don't know what to say about Ben Roethlisberger. Like until he decides to retire, which probably should be tomorrow. We're going to come and do this every week with Ben Roethlisberger, where he's clearly holding the offense back and like the receivers are pissed. Like they're pretty pissed off now. I don't know. I mean, Juju's out there pissed off on the sideline. I'm like, "You had an out, man." You could have left.
You could have gone to Baltimore, right?
Or Kansas City. They had an offer from the Chiefs. I mean, talk about like I am instantly filled with regret or whatever that Joel Bluth meme is from the frickin' whatever that show.
Yes, a meme drop, Harmon. Welcome to week 4.
Welcome to the season.
Took a minute.
I can't even remember what the show's called. Arrested Development, that overrated comedy overall. It's good, but it's not as good as people think it is. But, you know, definitely not overrated is Ben Roethlisberger, because everybody knows he's washed at this point. I said I wasn't going to sit here and talk about it, but now I'm going to talk about it. I just can't watch the guy throw short of the line of scrimmage on fourth down. Like, throwing short of the sticks on fourth down is a sin enough, but God, it's like throwing a Najee Harris behind the line of scrimmage on fourth down. It's like, you're just asking, okay,
again,
Najee.
Again this week.
Again. I mean, it's like, okay, Najee, yeah. Do everything. Like, break every tackle and make this work. It's not going to work. Oh, it's so bad. Because they have good players. It's so bad. I'm sorry.
I mean, and you hear the broadcasting crew also, like, making excuses. Like, in the same game that he breaks an NFL record 400th career touchdown pass for himself, like, you hear the broadcasting crew saying, like, well, you know, this offensive line is just, it's just a liability. And, like, he looks old, you know?
Yeah,
and like, you're right. The players are pissed. But Najee Harris is going to continue to see a ton of volume. Not double-digit targets in this one, but still 7 I'm not going to complain about. So yeah. He has 6 catches. He carries the ball 16 times, finds the end zone, plus 62 on the ground. We know what we have here. And so in some ways for fantasy, like, now we know what we have and we can move from a point of confirmation. And without Claypool in the mix, like, Deontay Johnson did catch 9 balls for 92 yards and find the end zone. Like, we don't mind that. I guess we just can't think about what could have been, and we just have to think about what is.
Good life advice.
Indeed. Baltimore traveled to Denver, and Teddy Bridgewater unfortunately left this one with an injury. So Drew Lock got a look. And I got to say, like, as the Broncos were down and Drew Lock was, like, pushing the ball deep, and he was finally Cortland Sutton had an appearance because Lock was like, we're going to YOLO this shit up. Like, I'm not. And then I'm feeling optimistic and it's fun. And I'm like, yeah, I forgot what this felt like. This is exciting. And you know, Teddy had been pushing the ball deep, so I'm not taking anything away from him. But, like, that is just Drew Lock at a baseline, right? Like, he's just like, oh, I see someone way over there. I'm going to do it. And then, of course, inevitably, he turns the ball over in the end zone. And then you're reminded of this whole experience.
Yeah, he was out there, like, yelling at Cortland Sutton after they didn't connect on a deep pass. Like, hey, Drew, maybe calm down a little bit.
Yeah, you gotta mention that part of it. You gotta mention that part of it. Let him have his moment.
Sorry, yeah, I know. Drew Lock is your guy. That feels like 100 years ago, doesn't it, at this point?
Him being my guy?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, no. Not really. It doesn't. I'm still rooting for him.
It feels like 100 years ago. But anyways, yeah, like, I don't know what to say. It's unfortunate for Teddy. Hopefully he can come back. You know, it's a concussion. Hopefully he comes back soon. We'll see. Cause yeah, it's just not the same offense. But this is also like, hey, this, you know, they had made a living early on, you know, beating up on the Giants and the Jets. This was a bit of a stiffer test there for the Denver Broncos overall, and they didn't really pass it. On the Ravens side, God, I guess they just want Latavius Murray to be their guy. Okay.
Oh, this was super frustrating. Tyson Williams, a healthy scratch. Just to get Le'Veon Bell some, like, reps?
I guess. Okay. Hope that was fun. I do like that they pushed, like, one, like, extra little bit just to get that, like, 100 yards rushing streak or whatever at the very end or something. Lamar still looks great as a passer. I really love the way they're throwing the football right now. Obviously, he has just 28 yards on the ground, but, you know, throws for 300 yards. Hollywood Brown comes down with a couple huge vertical plays. I hope all the whack jobs who want to take to Twitter and tweet about every Hollywood Brown mistake and, you know, use their very unoriginal jokes of that he's not Hollywood Brown, even though it's not L.A. Hollywood, it's like Florida Hollywood. I guess you want to call him Gainesville Brown or Tampa Bay Brown. Anyways, I hope you enjoy. It's like, live with the drops. The guy makes plays. Rashad Bateman will be back. They need Rashad Bateman at some point because, you know, that'll be enough of the whole Sammy Watkins as a starting receiver thing. But, you know, Marquise Brown's going to still make plays. And he's had 3 great games and one dud of a game so far this season.
Marquise from West Palm Beach. That's what we should call him.
Naples Brown.
Oh, that one felt weird. All right, so let's do
Naples is a nice town too. I shouldn't. My mom lives in Naples now, so it should be a little nicer.
Destin Brown. Brown is destined for West Palm Beach. Anyway, let's move to the Raiders at the Chargers. You and TJ do a DFS show, so give me a little DFS preview for Monday Night Football.
Well, like I mentioned on FFL seemingly 100 times, you know, like I said, sometimes you got a good research nug during the week and you just gnaw on that thing like a dog with a bone. You know, you just keep on going at it. The fact that the Chargers, I think, are going to be a really interesting matchup for the Raiders, because the Raiders receivers are all really cheap in daily fantasy, you know, $14 to $12. You've got Renfro, Ruggs, and Edwards in that order. Edwards and Ruggs are vertical guys. You know, they have high A dots, but Renfro's a really sneaky player to me in this one from a prop betting perspective too. His over-under in terms of catches on BetMGM is just 5.5. Yeah, I think he's going over that total, because this is a team, the way the LA Chargers play defense, the way that Brandon Staley designs defenses, they're going to take away the vertical pass. They've been great at taking the vertical pass away all year. 26.2 passer rating on throws of 15 plus air yards so far this year. You could tell, still have these numbers memorized. I think that suits like a big Darren Waller game, a big Hunter Renfro game. It makes sense there. And we know that the Chargers can be run on. So that's really the key here. Getting some clarity out of this backfield, which we don't have just yet. You know, John Gruden says that Josh Jacobs is very questionable, but there seems to be some optimism that he's going to play. So whether it's Jacobs, because it ain't Kenyon Drake, right? Like Kenyon Drake, they gave him all that money just to be Cordero Patterson, basically. Their version of Cordero Patterson that doesn't score touchdowns. So it'll be either Jacobs or Barber. I'm really interested in whichever one starts, because I think the matchup is right there. The Raiders have run the ball. They ran the ball really well last week against the Dolphins. Barber touched the ball 26 times. That was unbelievable. So, and you know what the Chargers are. The Chargers are the Chargers. Like, it's Herbert, it's Keenan Allen, it's Mike Williams, it's Austin Eckler. I think if I'm going to default to one of them, I will default if I can still, because the Raiders receivers are cheap, I think that helps you kind of unlock a few of these Chargers. If I'm going to default to one of them, I think I'll default to Eckler, because they've still given up some big passing game plays to the running back, and overall on the ground, I think they're a little weaker than they are through the air, the Raiders pass defense.
I think that's also I think everyone's going to be after Williams chasing the touchdowns from the week before. And then Keenan Allen would be the second option, because people are like, well, it's not going to be Williams, it's going to be Keenan. So being on Austin might make the most sense. And I agree with everything you said. I think I said it on FFL too. Like, I expect the Chargers to focus their energies on, of course, shutting down Darren Waller. That's going to be easier said than done, but also focusing on Ruggs, because as you saw against the Chiefs, they want to take away the explosive plays, the down the field plays. And so seeing Renfro get loose a bunch, and we know that Carr trusts him, and we know that, like, that is, you know, a little bit of like in stasis harmony for Carr and Ruggs, like seeing him move the chains, especially I think the Yahoo DFS is half point PPR. So I think that that might work really well for anyone playing that game. So congratulations. That is it for week 4. We did not talk about Tom Brady, who I'm pretty sure probably just broke some records. Anyway, we've covered the game. It's time for us to go. You can keep the conversation going with us on Twitter, though. We love social media. You can follow me at LizLoza_FF and Matt at MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're at it, make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy for the latest news and analysis from our whole team. That is going to do it for this episode. Scott and Andy will be back tomorrow with recommendations of who to pick up and who to drop. Until then, we're out.